I'm Chris Andre, in for Becca Bartelson. Coming up, Tom Chamberlain, Kulongoski's labor advisor, will likely take the place of Tim Nesbitt as leader of the Oregon AFL-CIO. Flooding in the northeastern part of the U.S. is continuing to wreak havoc. And in Iraq, Saddam Hussein goes on trial today. And in Ramadi, witnesses say that U.S. forces have killed 37 civilians, including women and children. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy, patches of early fog, temperatures in the 60s. A new era in Oregon State Labor Federation began yesterday. The state AFL-CIO bid farewell to its president, Tim Nesbitt, at its biennial convention. Now it's poised to replace him with his hand-picked successor, Tom Chamberlain. Chamberlain is Governor Kulongoski's labor advisor. Should Chamberlain win the nod today, he will lead a federation bruised by a national labor split and facing a round of state ballot measures that will put labor unions on the defensive. About 200 delegates from AFL-CIO unions attended yesterday's meeting. Missing were the largest state workers' union, Service Employees International Union, Local 503, and others that bolted the national AFL-CIO this summer to form the rival Change to Win Federation. Sweeney, who announced a tentative deal Friday that would enable those unions to return to state and local labor federations, said that accord should bind up some of our wounds. Until that deal is finalized, though, the Oregon Labor Federation has lost 40% of its members and an equal share of its operating budget. Mike Sullivan, a retired steelworker and delegate from McMinnville, described the convention as upbeat despite the challenges facing organized labor. This from the Salem Statesman Journal. Lawyers across Oregon are struggling to dissect last week's sweeping order by a judge which struck down the state's voter-approved property rights law as unconstitutional. Government officials, too, are working overtime to answer the questions streaming in from hundreds of property owners wondering what the ruling means for them and for the law's future. Measure 37 is the law decreed that governments had to compensate long-time property owners for any value lost to land use regulations or allow them to waive development rules. In the ruling, Marion County Circuit Judge Mary James said that while Measure 37 promised to restore property rights to thousands of landowners who were unable to develop their property because of environmental regulations, the law in the process unfairly deprived neighboring landowners of their rights. James also said Measure 37 eviscerates legislators' power in two ways, by forcing the state to choose between enforcing valid rules or paying landowners, and by effectively suspending existing laws. The judge's ruling, though, will likely not be the last word. It will be appealed to the Oregon Supreme Court. In the interim, landowners and governments must consider whether to go ahead with pending claims. The Bureau of Land Management announced its new management plan for Central Oregon, including the proposed Badlands Wilderness Area, and it could mean a change for all lands in the West. KBOO's Noah Eaton reports.
Agreement between the Bureau of Land Management and Conservation that bans motorized vehicles from the Badlands Wilderness Area. But in a move that could change the way all western lands are managed, it also includes a new plan allowing ranchers to voluntarily give up their grazing permits in the area, allowing other uses. Bill Marlett with the Oregon Natural Desert Association says this is good news.
They never had a process by which the rancher could turn around and turn their permits back into BLM or the Forest Service and have those agencies recognize the arrangement that had been reached.
Marlett says this agreement now allows interested groups to, quote, buy out ranchers' permits.
Badlands is now being managed better than a lot of BLM wildernesses in the West by virtue of the fact that we now have roughly two-thirds of it cow-free.
The proposed Badlands Wilderness Area is 15 miles east of Bend. Content was provided by the Oregon News Service. I am Noah Eaton, KBOO News.
A sergeant in the Washington State National Guard who is denied permission to visit Cuba to care for a sick son will be able to see his children, but in the United States. Sergeant Carlos Lazo is a Cuban-American who lives in Seattle and who won a Bronze Star in the war in Iraq. He was denied permission to return to his homeland to care for his son, But under an agreement with the State Department and the Cuban government, his two sons, ages 17 and 19, will visit him for 3 months. Lazo plans to fly to Miami on Friday to meet them. His family's plight has drawn national media attention and prompted lawmakers from both political parties to complain about the strict limits imposed by the Bush administration on travel to Cuba. An annual Veterans Day event in Berkeley, California, has been cancelled because organizers are split over whether an anti-war activist linked to Cindy Sheehan should be the keynote speaker. Some members of the volunteer organizing committee want Chuck Mitchell, a co-founder of Sheehan's Gold Star Families for Peace, to speak at the November 11th ceremony. But others are worried that Mitchell would impose his anti-Iraq war views into the traditionally non-political event. One veterans group threatened to pull out. Mitchell's backers disagree, saying that not allowing him to express his opinions amounts to censorship. Both sides were working on a compromise, but decided to cancel the event yesterday when they couldn't reach a consensus. A man who left Texas to get away from Hurricane Rita has been fatally shot in Maryland. Police say Alfredo Contreras was visiting relatives when he was killed Sunday night during an apparent robbery attempt in Woodlawn. Investigators say Contreras heard some commotion outside a house and decided to find out what it was. He was shot as he tried to break up a fight between a friend and some unknown men. Contreras' stepdaughter says two men in ski masks tried robbing Contreras and his brother-in-law. Police have no suspects. Officials at Los Angeles International Airport are rushing to develop plans to prevent the spread of bird flu. The airport is the nation's top gateway for Asian travelers, serving 26 daily flights carrying up to 10,000 passengers. It could be a hotspot if the avian flu mutated into a form that could pass between humans. One LAX official says that could happen in 6 months or 3 years, so he hopes to complete a plan within the month, which could entail placing up to 1,600 passengers under quarantine. The airport agency would feed and house the travelers, and U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials would enforce the quarantine. The World Health Organization says all evidence so far shows that the H5N1 virus does not spread easily from birds to infect humans. The agency is calling on rich countries to be more generous in providing financial and technical assistance in efforts to combat bird flu in Asia, as the World Health Organization's regional director in Asia says that while a global pandemic is possible, it is also preventable. FSRN's Gilly Lanao in Manila reports.
Israeli Defense Minister Shaul Mufaz decided to resume military incursions and to impose restrictions on the movement of Palestinians in the West Bank.
A special prosecutor's intensifying focus into who outed the CIA spy has raised questions whether Vice President Cheney himself is involved. At least one source and one reporter who have testified in the probe said U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald is pursuing Cheney's role in the Valerie Plame affair. In addition, at least six current and former Cheney staffers, most members of the White House Iraq group, have testified before the grand jury. Cheney's name has come up amid indications Fitzgerald may be edging closer to a blockbuster conspiracy charge with help from a secret informer. A source who has been questioned in the leak probe told the New York Daily News yesterday they've got a senior cooperating witness, someone who is giving them all they want. Cheney was questioned last year by prosecutors and has hired a private attorney, former colleague Terrence O'Donnell. This from Ross Story and the New York Daily News. A dam on the rain-swollen Mill River in New Jersey deteriorated overnight, and Taunton, New Jersey is prepared for the worst flooding today, evacuating residents, canceling classes, and closing off downtown on streets amid fears of a wall of water up to 6 feet deep. Mayor Robert Nunes said the situation at the wooden Whittington Pond Dam upstream from the city took a turn for the worse about 2 a.m. this morning, resulting in an increase of water flow. Nunes said the city of Taunton still is in a state of emergency. If the dam goes, it will create massive flooding along the Mill River and into the downtown Taunton area. Officials said that if the Whittington Pond Dam burst, it could unleash a wall of water up to 6 feet high and flood neighborhoods and downtown Taunton. Responding promptly to the pending disaster, Governor Mitt Romney said this morning, "I've got my fingers crossed that this thing will be able to hold. There is every prospect that it will give way, and we'll have a very significant water event." Dive teams were standing by if rescues proved necessary, and a shelter has been set up at a local high school manned by the Red Cross. The National Weather Service issued a flood warning calling the situation extremely dangerous. Congress is expected to take up... Sorry about that one. Having a bit of technical difficulty this morning, but I think we have it ironed out. The United States has offered needy countries more than 330,000 packaged meals donated by Britain to feed Hurricane Katrina victims, but rejected due to a U.S. ban on British beef. State Department spokesman Adam O'Reilly said the Meals Ready to Eat, or MREs, had been held in a warehouse in Little Rock, Arkansas, for more than a month after U.S. Agricultural Department officials said they could not be distributed in the United States because they contained British beef products. The United States bans the import of products containing British beef because of fears of mad cow disease, a chronic degenerative disease affecting the central nervous system of cattle. An additional 33,000 MREs from Germany, Russia, Spain, and France had also not been distributed to hurricane victims because of U.S. legal restrictions. More than 100 nations offered assistance to the United States after Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans and other U.S. Gulf Coast communities on August 29th. This, according to Reuters. Missouri officials must let a pregnant inmate have an abortion, the Supreme Court said yesterday, rejecting an appeal by anti-abortion Governor Matt Blunt. Missouri, which has some of the strictest abortion laws in the country, argued taxpayers should not have to pick up the tab for transporting the woman to an abortion clinic. The unanimous order declining to intervene comes as the Senate prepares for the confirmation hearing for Supreme Court nominee Harriet Myers, during which lawmakers are sure to press her on abortion. She was picked to replace Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, a key swing voter in abortion cases, who is now retiring. Blunt criticized the court, saying its decision is highly offensive to traditional Missouri values and is contrary to state law, which prohibits taxpayer dollars from being spent to facilitate abortions. The Republican governor earlier had denounced what he called an outrageous order from an activist federal judge who sided with the inmate. He called a special session this fall to pass new restrictions on abortion and has promised to work with abortion foes on more laws. Thunderstorms pounded Southern California with lightning-streaked downpours of rain and hail yesterday, knocking out power to some 140,000 customers and snarling traffic as mudslides forced closure of the state's main north-south interstate. Interstate 5 was shut down in both directions in the mountains about 65 miles north of Los Angeles because of the mud and up to 4 feet of standing water on parts of the road. In the Los Angeles area, mud and debris flowed off a burned mountainside in suburban Burbank, and hail nearly 1 inch in diameter hit to the east of Arcadia. Hollywood Hills neighborhoods were freckled with pea-sized hail. Traffic accidents tied up freeways, including an apparently weather-related gasoline tanker crash and fire on Interstate 5 that killed a driver shortly before 2 a.m. this morning. Flash flooding was a concern in areas denuded by big wildfires earlier this fall. We'll be right back. I'd like to apologize for some of the technical difficulties that we're having, problems with the equipment. And now we have the Free Speech Radio News Native American Federal Recognition story. Federal recognition of Indian tribes in Connecticut is being compounded by the hot-button issue of Indian gaming in that state. Melinda Tuhus reports from New Haven.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs requires that a tribe seeking federal recognition meet seven requirements. One is that it must descend from a tribe of Native Americans that existed at the time when non-Indians made first sustained contact with the tribe.
It's amazingly difficult to put together a petition like the one that's required by the federal government. They want tribes like Skaticook to show for 350 years, on a substantially continuous basis, as they say in the regulations, that that tribe has continued to exist throughout time. 350 years.
That was Steve Austin, a cultural anthropologist who worked for the BIA for 7 years in the 1990s and then went to work as a private contractor for tribes all over the hemisphere. He worked on the petitions for both the Eastern Pequots and the Skaticokes and says despite the difficulties, both tribes earned federal recognition in 2002 and 2004, respectively. But in its reversal last week, the BIA ruled that the tribes had failed to maintain a separate Indian community and exercise political authority over their members on a substantially continuous basis. All the state's top officials attacked the tribes for allying with wealthy backers who planned to establish casinos on the reservations if the tribes were federally acknowledged. Skaticoke Chief Richard Velke says his tribal nation has been pursuing federal recognition for more than 20 years.
From 1981 to 1997, we did it on our own. Climate changed, and by the climate I mean once gaming got involved in 1988, then the resistance started to attack the tribes seeking federal recognition. We have no other choice but to go out and find a financial backer or lose your identity. We weren't about to lose our identity.
With federal recognition comes the designation of a tribe as a, quote, semi-sovereign, dependent nation. This includes the possibility of establishing casinos as well as other types of economic development, including management of their natural resources. Recognition also grants a level of political autonomy, including electing leaders and running tribal courts, and it provides for educational scholarships for Native Americans, health services, and low-interest loans for housing and small businesses. The Skaticokes and Eastern Pequots charge that the bar was raised impossibly high on their applications in an effort to keep more casinos out of the state. And according to that standard, no tribe could get federal recognition. Connecticut Attorney General Richard Blumenthal disagrees.
The standard was exactly the same, that even if a more lenient standard had been applied, 150-year gaps in evidence on key criteria simply come nowhere near to meeting the standard.
The Eastern Pequots are still deciding whether to file a federal appeal, but Steve Austin says the Skaticokes are planning to appeal on the grounds that the ruling is arbitrary and capricious.
They've heightened the requirements beyond what they've ever required them to be before, and I think we should be able to establish that in federal court, which could lead to this being overturned. It's an uphill battle. Only one tribe has ever done this before and successfully. That was the Samish tribe in Washington State.
The state charged that casino interests wielded undue influence over the process and requested an investigation by the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, chaired by Senator John McCain. Blumenthal says a memorandum was uncovered indicating an irregularity in granting recognition, but no one was charged with wrongdoing. Now Chief Velke says McCain should conduct another investigation because the tribes are charging the state with undue influence.
He needs to have another hearing, but this time he needs the people on the hot seat from the state of Connecticut, not the tribes sitting in front of him.
For FSRN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in New Haven.
In Iraq, American fighter jets and combat helicopters killed about 70 people around Ramadi yesterday as violence in Iraq resumed 2 days after a successful referendum on a new constitution. American officials maintained all the dead were terrorists, but local people claimed that 39 civilians were killed in the attacks. Television footage appeared to show a woman and children among the bodies. The sight of explosions, grieving widows, and mangled bodies are all too familiar, but yesterday they were particularly shocking for Iraqis coming so soon after millions defied the threat of violence to vote. Well, the Constitution is expected to be approved. The Electoral Commission said it would have to delay the final result after finding that turnout in many provinces was higher than expected. The U.S. military said the casualties is in Ramadi with the result of operations started on Sunday to combat insurgent groups that have taken control of parts of the area. This according to the Telegraph. Iraq's Election Commission announced yesterday that officials were investigating an unusually high number of yes votes in about a dozen provinces during Iraq's landmark referendum on a new constitution. The discovery raises questions about irregularities in the balloting. Word of the review came as Sunni Arab leaders repeated accusations of fraud after initial reports from the provinces suggested the constitution had passed. Among the Sunni allegations are that the police took ballot boxes from heavily no districts and that some yes areas had more votes than registered voters. The Electoral Commission made no mention of fraud, and an official with knowledge of the election process cautioned that it was too early to say whether the unusual numbers were incorrect or if they would affect the outcome. But questions about the numbers raised tensions over Saturday's referendum, which has already sharply divided Iraqis. Saddam Hussein goes on trial today for his life in a courtroom in Baghdad tomorrow. The main charge against him is that he ordered the murder of 143 men from the village of Dujail after an attempt to assassinate him in 1982. The attitude of Iraqis towards the trial is divided. Kurds and Shias almost all want to see the former dictator executed for mass murder, while many Sunni Arabs believe the charges against him are exaggerated or faked. Saddam Hussein will be brought by American guards from a U.S. detention facility to the court in the capital's Green Zone near the palaces where he once lived. The U.S. is eager for the trial to appear to be seen as an Iraqi affair, though security will be in the hands of the U.S. military. The charges against Saddam Hussein have yet to be spelled out in court, but Iraqi officials say they will focus on Dujail because the documentary evidence is clear, linking the former leader to the killings. This according to The Independent. Israel has suspended all security contacts with the Palestinians and began sealing off biblical Bethlehem in a West Bank clampdown yesterday after gunmen killed three settlers in the deadliest attack on Israelis in months. The flare-up on Sunday in the occupied West Bank, including Israel's killing of a senior Islamic militant, came a month after the Jewish state completed its pullout from the Gaza Strip after 38 years of military rule. The latest fighting raised new doubts about an already flimsy 8-month-old ceasefire and undermined hopes that the Gaza pullout would spur new peacemaking. Despite that, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas planned to go ahead with talks with President Bush this week on how to resuscitate the roadmap to peace plan. Israel said it was suspending all security contacts with the Palestinian Authority that had increased in recent months with coordination of the pullout from the Gaza Strip. Palestinian cars were banned from certain roads in the West Bank, where troops have kept most towns and cities encircled during much of a 5-year-old Palestinian uprising. The army said it arrested 19 wanted militants in overnight raids. This according to Reuters. Germany's Chancellor-designate Angela Merkel named her 7 conservative cabinet members yesterday, prompting speculation that her position as the country's first woman leader would be weakened by rivalry within her own party. Merkel's Christian Democrats were forced to concede 8 of the 16 cabinet posts to the centre-left Social Democrats under a power-sharing deal reached last week. However, her own cabinet nominations did little to suggest that she would retain the upper hand at the head of the coalition, as several key posts were earmarked for her erstwhile conservative rivals. Angela Merkel will preside over her cabinet like a lion tamer in a circus ring, wrote Der Spiegel magazine yesterday. With Merkel already facing the prospect of stiff opposition to her reform program from the Social Democrats, she also appeared likely to be given a rough ride by her own party. This according to The Independent. The British government has persuaded 4 other European countries to join it in challenging a 1996 ruling from the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg that stops it sending foreign terrorist suspects back to countries such as Algeria, where they could face torture. Along with Britain, the governments of Italy, Lithuania, Portugal, and Slovakia have been given permission to intervene as interested parties in a case already lodged against the Netherlands by Mohamed Ramsey, the 22-year-old Algerian suspected of involvement in terrorism who is challenging deportation. Ministers hope to persuade the Strasbourg court to reconsider its judgment of the 1996 case of Karamjit Singh Chahal, a Sikh militant who successfully argued that he should not be sent back to India because he would face a very real risk of inhuman treatment by the authorities there. The issue of torture was also at the heart of a separate case which started yesterday before Britain's highest court, involving some of the terrorist suspects the government wants to deport. Lawyers for 8 of 10 men known as the Belmarsh detainees, who were originally held without charge under the Anti-Terrorism Crime and Security Act of 2001, asked a panel of 7 law logs to rule that any evidence obtained by foreign states using torture cannot be used in courts in the UK. This according to The Guardian. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, October 18, 2005. Chris Andre edited the news, KBOO News from volunteers and reporters produced and edited the tape. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director, and Carlos Chavez is on the board right now. I'm Chris Andre. Thanks for listening. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy, patches of fog early, temperatures in the 60s. Coming up this morning on your community radio station at 7:30, Joe Uris and Abe Proctor host Talk Radio. At 9, join host Per Fargren for a special program featuring an extended interview with John Perkins, author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Perkins is a former respected member of the international banking community. He says he helped the U.S. cheat poor countries around the globe out of trillions of dollars by lending them more money than they could possibly repay and then taking over their economies. At 10:30 on stage in studio, hear about Imago Theatre's next production of Carol Churchill's Not Enough Oxygen. And later in the show, 3 women discuss their experiences with breast cancer. And at 11, join us for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. Have a good day.
This is the KBOO Community Calendar on air for Tuesday, October 18th, 2005. Every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m., the Liberty Reading Circle meets in Southeast Portland. KBOO listeners are invited to come and learn about the principles actually contained in the founding documents for the United States of America. The organizers are emphatic that these circles are and will stay nonpartisan. The circle will examine and discuss a range of press reports, essays, videos, and documentaries that show the difference between a democracy and a republic and why one prefers one to the other. The website is www.enoughwaste.com. Exact location is available by phone from Renee at 503-238-6973. Code Pink holds an anti-war, anti-military rally at the Military Recruitment Center at 1317 Northeast Broadway in Portland every Tuesday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. For more information, phone Constance of Code Pink at 503-546-9527. Tonight, Tuesday the 18th, the Bus Project will hold its monthly speaker meeting, this month entitled Electoral Dysfunction, a Forum About Better Elections. The Bus Project has formed a panel of activists and politicians, including Barbara Dudley, former executive director of Greenpeace and current professor in the Hatfield School of Government, and Marshall Runkel, Director of Municipal Initiatives for the One Economy Corporation and former aide to City Commissioner Eric Sten. The panel will focus on four election reform issues: voter-owned elections, open primaries, contribution limits, and fusion voting. The location is the Rogue Brewery, 1339 Northwest Flanders Street, and the time is from 7 to 8:30 p.m. More information is available by phone at 503-223-5018. The Bus Project website is busproject.org. The KBOO Programming Committee is running an evaluation of all KBOO's programs that air on Monday and Tuesday, 24 hours a day on those days, starting at 5:30 a.m. And the most important evaluations are those that come from you, KBOO's listeners. More information, including downloadable program evaluation forms, appears on KBOO's homepage at kboo.fm. Evaluation forms are also available at KBOO Studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, just east of the Burnside Bridge. This has been the KBOO Community Calendar on air for Thursday, October 18th, 2005. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon.